Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 63, Physiology, Part 2. We began our study of the human being a bit counterintuitively. Rather than beginning where we're awake in our sensory organism, we began actually in our metabolic system. And we're going to look at digestion. And it wasn't completely counterintuitive because, as far as I can tell, Freud was completely wrong. He thought that adolescence was all about awakening to sexuality, and all my kids ever talked about was food. They were obsessed, and class trips were agonizing because hardly had we left the third or fourth rest stop in which we had gone to use the bathroom, but actually to get food to eat, everybody was hungry all over again. So I thought, okay, they're already kind of, they have a dull wakefulness. Let's make it brighter and sharper. So we began two things. One of them was as a homework assignment for the next week. They were to keep a meticulous journal of everything that they ate. What time, an estimation of how much, and so on. And some were able to do this, you know, even using measuring cups and things like that to be really accurate, or little scales. And for others, it was a more casual matter. But wow, was that ever interesting. And I can't tell you how many parents were mortified that their children were letting me know their bizarre, horrible, unhealthy, unhygienic eating habits. But as I had told the parents the year before, you're going to see the end of your child's rhythmic system as you know it. They are literally getting a new heart, and they're going to put rhythm aside for a period of time and replace it with beat in their music, but also in the whole way they go about life. And certainly, if we had kept a journal of sleep, which I did not, but that could be another good homework assignment, I'm sure it would be just as bizarre and totally crazy, or a journal of exposure to TV or today video games. How far do you want to go? But anyway, this eating journal was interesting, and it did awaken them. And some of them said, as we shared these in class, I'm going to change my ways. I can't go on like that. So it had a kind of hygienic, salutary effect, I think, in the end. So we look at digestion, and this is what I want to urge you to do. Steiner's threefold picture of the human being is fantastic, and as he said, it took him 30 years to develop it. He had the vision of it, the intuition of it. It seems like it's really a no-brainer, right? It's so simple. Once you know it, once you hear it. But he took a long time developing it, and he said it really was the core of human existence. And then from there, one can start threefolding everything, including our society, perhaps. So that's true. On the other hand, it's also important not just to present these as sort of dead entities. We are asleep in our digestive system and our metabolic system. It's all, you know, in our diaphragm. It's below here. And the, you know, we think with our brain and all of that. One wants to be very careful about making it corpse-like, but rather, I think it's also a good way for us to bring a little bit of liveliness and self-connection with the threefold picture. Try to see how even in any one-folded part of the human being, there's a threefoldness there as well. So this is what we did. I asked, where does digestion begin? And it's in the stomach when the food goes in your stomach. Okay, that's one place. But Are you aware that when we are tasting food, that our stomach acids are beginning to form, that the stomach starts to get ready for the food that may not be coming for a couple of minutes or at least a few seconds away, that in fact the intestines are starting to churn. So we, without really having learned about these particular organs, I'm just sort of giving a little bit of a description of what's going on. And what happened then was we began to extend this further and further outside of the conventional digestive system. Yes, it's true that when we start to taste food, the digestive system is activated, but after all, we have saliva in our mouth, and that's a liquid, and that's already, in one way or another, making the food more like what the stomach will accept. But then we also talked about smelling food and, you know, what it's like at Thanksgiving time in your house, how maddening it is to be smelling that turkey for hours and hours, knowing that you won't get to eat it until you sit down, and even then you're going to have to wait for everybody to be served before you. And, you know, all of these agonizing stories. Okay, so the smell of food, right. Now, guys, when we were on our class trip last year, I remember vividly how every time we passed a billboard for McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, how somebody or two or three or sometimes everybody in the van started to talk about how hungry they were. And could we stop there? I know it's junk food, Mr. Schwartz, but it looks so good. Looking, seeing, even seeing images of food actually starts to stimulate the digestion. It's not just that our brain gets hungry. It has nothing to do with it. When we feel hunger, when you say, I am hungry, you are expressing a fact, a chemical, a physiological fact in your body, and simply seeing the food will have that response. But I want to tell you all a story, and I told them a very condensed story of Ernest Shackleton, one of the last figures of the age of exploration all the way into the 20th century. How he and his men got completely marooned in Antarctica, and what it took for him to go off and find help and so on. And there they were, not knowing in this ship in the cold desolation of the most isolated place in the world, not knowing if they were going to live. So what do people like that do? What do when you think this may be your last day or you're going to slowly die or whatever? What they did was mostly talk about great meals that they had eaten in their lives. And most of these men were fairly sophisticated men of the world, travelers. They had eaten in great restaurants, and they loved to eat and had wonderful meals. Now, you would imagine how horrible they're tormenting each other by talking about these meals. And yet, under those circumstances, thinking about the food and talking about it actually satisfied their hunger. It created an entirely different response than you might imagine in their metabolic system. They were picturing the food so vividly, it was as though they were eating it. And that's very interesting. So even thinking about food, not using our senses at all, has an effect of one kind or another on our digestive system. So we realize that, we didn't say that right away, digestion has a sensory component. You know, digestion, which is metabolic, has a sensory side as well. Does it have a rhythmic side? Is it connected with our heart and our lungs as well? When the bolus, we're going to learn more about what that means, but when this sort of ball of food that's been worked over by our teeth and our saliva is going down the esophagus, or the gullet, as it's often called, and heading towards the stomach, it doesn't just flow down there without a care in the world, because there is a very interesting muscle that is in the vicinity of our heart. And this muscle is called the cardiac, which is a term many of you have heard. What does it have to do with? That's right, the heart. And, you know, Jody's dad is a cardiologist. We know that about him. And he's going to come and talk to us about the heart next week. But in the meantime, it's called the cardiac sphincter. And sphincter is a very interesting term. It sounds a little bit like Sphinx, doesn't it? Remember when in fifth grade we heard about the riddle of the Sphinx? What did the Sphinx do? It was a guardian, right? It would not let people through. And we don't have too many sphincter muscles in our body. Let me show you what a sphincter muscle looks like. And I would get one of these, I think they were called scrungies or something, these hair bands that girls had, a round piece of elastic. And I could, you know, put my fingers in it and open it and close it a bit. I said, that's exactly what a sphincter is like. And what will happen is two things. If the food is too large, if there's some problem with it, that sphincter may close up and not allow it to go down, and it may then have to be coughed up. That can also happen a little earlier on if the food actually gets into our eustachian tube, our windpipe. That's another issue. So there, the lungs don't want it either. And also, when I worked for a decade at an anthroposophical retirement community and a home for the aged and the dying, the fellowship community, there was always someone there, always an aged person who would say, I'm having a stomach ache. I need my heart medicine. And we even have an expression, heartburn, because this is often where there is a problem with the heart, it will manifest as an issue with the upper part of the digestion. So the heart and the lungs stand guard, and they are rhythmically, their rhythmical pulsing is reflected in the way in which our food is pushed down into our stomach. You'd imagine, well, it's just gravity, right? I'll tell you, you can, you know, be doing a yoga exercise upside down and chewing on food. That food will make its way to your stomach. It is remarkable how powerful that force of pushing is. So it's not just going down as though we are a little tunnel there, or a little freeway, a game for marbles. Rather, it's a rhythmical pushing, and with each of those pushes, that bolus is tested, it's sort of questioned by the sphinx-like figures down in the upper part of our digestive system to make sure that it is ready to be digested. So our digestion has a rhythmic component. And if somebody is on the verge of having a heart attack, minor or major, their body will not accept any food. And that can be some minutes before that the metabolic system starts to shut down because it doesn't want to stress the heart any more than it's already being stressed. So we see that in this part of our body in which we are very asleep, it's also really connected to our senses, with which we, as we have said, we're very awake there, and our rhythmic system, where sometimes we're awake, sometimes not. We'll go on.